So along those things, we're going to double-click into a lot of the conversation that, Mark had. I'm welcoming up Adam from Microsoft and Claude from InCycle, and they're going to go into talking about evolving. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So just bear with me one sec.
Just give me...
So hi everyone. So we will be talking about the rise to the challenge and adapt to change. So, but by the way, on the picture, it's Adam and I. Like you can recognize the shape. Like it's a. So my name is Claude, and I do ALM, Application Lifecycle Management. That's pretty much all I do. Actually, if you ask my wife, she'd say that's all he does. Like, he does nothing else. But I do ALM. Sorry about that. I'm from InCycle, basically. So we're an ALM consultancy, and we have offices in 5 or 6 places now. We also have a product, which is a DevOps product for working with TFS. And I've been doing that for, actually, since the beta of the first version of TFS. So we've seen all everything go. And today what we'll talk is how is the world today regarding this. So as Mark was saying, things change a lot. So I'll talk a little bit about what is a modern app. So this new idea Microsoft is putting forth, which is basically their way of saying what an app looks like today. And then what it means in terms of toolings, ALM process, and how we need to change our dev organizations to deal with that. And again, when I say dev organization, it's actually the whole cycle, dev and operations. I'll probably fall down at some point. All right. So, by the way, just before we go forward, now I'll get something out of it, so just get a sense. Who in the room is actually using TFS, Visual Studio and TFS earlier versions? Ooh, okay, that's pretty good. Who's using 2012 already? All right, that's pretty good. Who's using agile approaches, agile way of working, or in the midst of putting that in place? Okay, that's interesting about it. All right. So a lot of this then should resonate at some level to most of the people in the room. So basically, what we're saying, and this idea there of the grand convergence is the idea that the way to do apps, more modern apps, meaning applications that you can use with your multiple devices, is something that the early adopter market used to do. You got the Twitters and you got the other web social media apps that started and so on and so forth. And now what we see is enterprise is now starting to asking for those applications. They're kind of going, hey, when I get in my CRM, I'd like to follow somebody. Or I'd like to vote on this idea internally. And all these mechanisms now are moving over into the main market and into the enterprise. So we see a broad adoption about last summer, actually agile approaches became the most used method for development, beating the traditional winner, like that the market leader for basically forever. So who's now the second most used method? What's your guess on what's currently what Agile beat to become the first used software development method? Any idea?
No process.
You're 20 points. No process, right? So we have no process is now number 2. But now it's getting there, and we see it like in every company. Everybody is conscious now of Agile. And then you get that pressure from users. In the past, what we had were the best apps we had in the office. Now those best apps you have on your phone. Now you're expecting when you need to connect to your app at work, as Mark was saying, he's on the phone, he expects from his phone to be able to go and find where's the meeting, who's the meeting, and so on and so forth. We all see that. There's also a generational thing happening, like the Y generation, which I'm missed by a thread there. But the new people coming in, they connect. They actually expect to be all the time connected. And that's coming to be more of a standard things that is part of the way we do it. You see it, insurance companies, go online, fill your things on your own, or you know, the customer relationship is now managed a lot with the system where you expect a lot more self-service from many companies. And now as software dev, what is coming is people expect that. People expect that, you know, you can do your app, you can manage external, internal processes with those type of engagement with the customer, those type of UIs and those type of approach. So that's kind of the modern app, at least to, like that all-encompassing idea. So we talked about, I just talked about quickly about the modern app, what it is. So really the big basis is that users are expecting these modern apps, these experience. And then the way to enable that is through now the modern app life cycles. And that's what Visual Studio and the whole family of product, Visual Studio ALM, brings to the table, and we'll talk a lot about that. But basically the big change now is that what you see, it's really a tight loop. It's no longer dev, and we have the wall, we pass it over on the other side to operation. Now it's really tight loop, faster delivery, learning from what's happening in operations, learning in the dev process from requirements from customers using the system and bringing back in. And the challenge we have is making sure that our life cycle is in line with those approaches. We can no longer wait 2 years for a new version. And then the other big part is the modern data center. Again, IT, internal landed IT in our box often will take a lot of time. So there's processes, there's tools that will help that. And then you get, and for certain case, now we can go to the cloud. We can expand that. And that's where the concept of hybrid IT, I have trouble with H's, like it's I'm a French guy, so hybrid IT, all right. But the key is really that. We also have a lot of data. Now you do something, you kind of go, oh, other people who've done that also did this, and so on and so forth. All these crunching of massive amount of data is something that's kind of more and more expected, because behind those very sleek, nice, simple user experience, there's a lot of data power needed. And that's where that basically the modern data center becomes important to be able to, as the backbone of those applications, to be able to deliver them and run them. So in a nutshell, it's basically to have better apps, have faster development cycles, and have actually cheaper environment. And it's not only cheaper, it's cheaper but also more scalable, more elastic based on what we need to do. So what are those characteristics, if we look at them piece by piece, of a modern app? The first one is personalized and contextualized. In the past, we used to tell the user, this is how you need to learn to use the system as the system was designed. More and more now, we expect the system to react to us. A simple example is, I'm already logged in. I'm getting into that other system. I don't want to log in again. Like, you know who I am. You should know my preference. You should know my language. You should know what I'm following and what not. Last time I did this, so that should be kept. So it should always be based on, you know, you should know system, who I am, and how to adapt yourself to my need or to my behavior or to my preference, which is a big shift in terms of previous app where we say, well, instead we'll train you or we'll send you a guide, which you will not read, and then you'll call help desk, and we'll all go through that cycle. The other big change is we expect to always be connected, multi-device connected. Like more and more application, you expect that, hey, I'm using this site, I expect that I can use it on my phone also, right, or my tablet. So, and again, these requirements now, you have people bringing their own devices to work, and they want to say, yeah, I want to, when I'm at home or I'm traveling, I don't want to bring my laptop and all this, I want to use my phone and whatnot. So we now need to make sure that what we build, our app, works on all those form factors. And that's a new approach or a new characteristic of the modern app is when we build it, we look at it, we're thinking of all these usage scenarios we have. Always accessible. It's a bit on the same idea. We expect we expect it to be online. We expect it to work. Also, more and more, we interconnect our apps. I have my app, but for the mapping, I go get a service on the cloud or for my federation or whatnot. So we expect things to run all the time. You know, in the past, we knew we'd get in, we'd connect and whatnot. Now, you just bring in, you open your thing, and you expect it to your apps to work with you not doing anything. It took us a lot of time to get there for the older people, but we got there. And now, you know, we have a really solid platform to do those. So that's interesting to see all these types of usage we can now do just like going from one place to the other. I mentioned it earlier. It's very data intensive. So that a lot of that ease of use comes with a lot of process in the background and a lot of data and a lot of correlations you need to do. So again, that's another characteristic. We expect that if I've done things, the app keeps that information. We expect in a modern app that those behavior will adjust for us. And it's always evolving. And you see that, again, more into the web services, the LinkedIn or the Twitter or whatnot. The service is continuously evolving and faster and faster. And again, those attitudes are kind of intrinsic to a modern app. A modern app is not something you roll out and you go, we'll roll next version in 3 years to 5 years. Or a year. We expect now to have those new versions all the time. It's interesting for me to see Microsoft, even for Visual Studio now, coming out like with regular versions all the time. I mean, since 2004, you know, we got 2005 came out at that time. Then we got to 2008, you know, like 3-4 years later. Then we got to 2010, 2 years later. Now we got with 2 years later, 2012, and now we're getting like upgrades all the time, and we see like the shrinking on those cycles just from Microsoft themselves with their product, with all their online suites like CRM Online and whatnot. We see the continuous change on that. You go to the Flickr of this world, the coder checks in, and within the half an hour or so, it actually gets to production right away, goes through all the gates and automated testing and whatnot. So it's like so you have a continuous deployment of new features. There's actually all these new practice about trying to bring a new features, open it to a limited IP range, test reactions and whatnot, and then if it works, bring more IP usage to it and whatnot. So production is now your new test bed. So it's at that old premise of now we do, instead of build, test, deploy, we do build, deploy, test. Some companies, mostly web companies, will try two sets of features and see which one is most used. You can now instrument your apps and see who's using which feature and get that information, feed it back to your development backlog and go figure, well, feature A is a lot more used than feature B, so that UI setup is much better. So again, that's the idea of the modern app to evolve quickly. It means also a very tight life cycle. So behind it, we look at those requests, actually, and Mark was pointing to that. A lot of those were created or made available by advances in technologies. And you know, the more innovative companies started doing these apps, and now it's kind of becoming the new normal or getting the more main market. So the big trends behind it is really the connected device, as I was talking. So everybody asked them. That trend will continue more and more. We can even ask ourselves with the Surface, a lot of people will probably get rid of the laptop altogether. Continuous services, so it's that expectation of it's out there, it's in the web, on the cloud. For a lot of people, it's the same thing, but it's there, I can use it, I expect it to be there. Big data, a lot of the data is now available, and that technology on the big data like really, really changed over the last few years. The ability to ramp up servers, use them, SQL in the cloud, that really helps supporting those type of approaches, and the hybrid infrastructure. I did my H properly this time.
Very good.
So I'll let Adam go over a quick demonstration of some of these things, and also kind of the underpinnings technically that we have.
Thanks, Claude. So we talked a lot about, and we've talked a lot about the sort of evolution of what we see as a modern application. And certainly there's a whole series of infrastructures that sit behind this. And really when we're talking about it, you know, at the platform management level, there are changes that are happening that impact us as developers. But to a large extent, the technologies that we use today in terms of how we build applications for those backends remain unchanged. The platform is the platform. the big change for us, and we'll get into this a little later today, is the concept of unified management and how that feeds into operations. And a big goal in this wave of technology we're at the kind of at the beginning of now is the concept that, hey, whether that infrastructure and the services you use sit up in the cloud, in somebody's data center that you're paying for use of, or it's in your own data center, you should, as a developer, and more you will see, a parity of services available to you. So whether you target, when you build the application, that app should just run locally, or in somebody's data center, in the cloud, or in a hybrid model. And we'll talk about the concept of integrating operations into development and getting feedback. A big part of that parity is going to deliver us the ability to get more reactive data from our applications in real time and be able to respond to those. And that's a big part of the whole idea of shortening the time to delivery and getting better quality. There's a lot of web standards that we're calling for today or that we're using today, and two of them that I think everybody would be in agreement to using or are using today are things like REST and OData. The industry has evolved to have a kind of standard way of accessing data, exposing data, consuming data across a variety of platforms. And those platforms are generally accessed using the connected devices we talked about. And I'm going to kind of demonstrate what we mean by that. And those connected devices, funny enough, aren't just from one vendor. One of the things that's happened is with the explosion of devices and device types, there's been a real explosion around standards in terms of building applications that can be consumed intelligently and appropriately on different devices. And you'll see when we move over. We talked about the idea that, you know, there are some core services that you might want to leverage in your application that may be something that traditionally you've built in-house. So think about as you're building an application for consumers or business partners, you're managing that security. You're handling the authentication and the sign-on in your application code. Well, you know, one of the concepts of this parity and the idea that the infrastructure sits both in the cloud is that you can build hybrid applications. How many people have played with a Windows 8 PC so far or running Windows 8? You know, one of the amazing things is the first time you start up, it asks you for your live ID. And guess what? You're actually signing into your PC using a live ID. And by doing that using the identity services in the cloud, we can actually have our preferences follow us and have an experience where, you know, as I move between different devices, things like my favorites follow me, things like my shortcuts on my desktop. If I go over to my PC and change my background image on one PC, you know, walk over to my other PC, 5 minutes later, my background has been updated. Things like that are new, and they rely on services that might be hosted in my organization or elsewhere. And identity is a perfect example. Why would you spend time and money building your own identity system in your application when you can leverage somebody else's service and simply do authorization? Let somebody else handle the password changes and password resets and all that kind of stuff. And of course, the social aspects of it. Now, I'm not saying that every enterprise application needs to be connected to Facebook, Twitter, and live services, but it is really funny. Anytime you go shopping online now and you want to buy something, every page has got, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Everybody is embracing that, and it's becoming more and more prevalent. Claude mentioned a good point. The social connection, the social interaction of leveraging these services is not just about leveraging these commercial services, but also making the app more acceptable to users as they get used to the idea that their experience is personal with their device. And it should be personal everywhere they go. And of course, connectivity between all of that, and the tools need to be able to support this pretty dramatically. So of course, on our platform, this is how it all plays together. And this is what we've really strived to deliver in Visual Studio 2012. Certainly the platform there is Windows Server. Obviously that's what we offer up as a platform and management using the System Center technologies. But then a lot of stuff coming with the .NET Framework 4.5 around the Model View Controller, the Web API, the Entity Framework, the Azure services out there. And if you haven't looked at Azure is just not a hosting platform. It's a complete platform service that you can leverage and build hybrid applications with. You don't have to store your data up there, but you can use the federation services or the workflow services to build really interesting experiences. And of course, the connected devices, largely delivered through tools like HTML5 and JavaScript and CSS. So what I thought I'd do is actually demonstrate some of that. And I'm going to switch out of PowerPoint for a minute and hopefully go into Visual Studio. And we're going to actually start a brand new application to kind of talk about how Visual Studio is going to deliver a better experience when you're building for these connected devices. So traditionally, if I wanted to build a new web application, I would do the normal file new project. And I'd say, OK, I'm going to go up to C# and I'm going to pick web. And I get a whole variety of different templates that I can use to build a web application. And of course, it's not on my second screen. So let me just do this. This is Windows 8. So I'm going to go over here. I'm going to go to Devices. And I'm going to say Duplicate. And this is going to put a real kink in our AV guys' bonnet there. But that's just the way things roll. Now, can you see it OK, everybody? It's a little cramped, but we'll get there. So I'm going to do the File New Project this time. And I'm going to pick a C# web project. And you may notice, by the way, this Visual Studio 2012, if you haven't played with it, you still have the multi-targeting that you had in Visual Studio 2010. The framework 4.5 is new. It adds a lot of new capabilities and features, particularly around things like asynchronous support, access to the WinRT APIs. But there's a lot of stuff here, particularly for building and targeting other devices, that's pretty cool. And of course, you would normally go and pick a template to start with. Maybe you're going to do web forms. You'll notice here the ASP MVC4 web application is one of the templates. Now, one of the things that the team has done pretty dramatically is, hey, you know, our world has changed. And the devices that are going to consume our web applications are varied and have various capabilities. So they've actually built stuff into MVC4 to help you target those devices in ASP.NET. And of course, from here, I'm going to resize this dialog so I can actually click on it. I'll create a very simple little web app, not a big deal. And I'm going to, you know, it's using the normal creative name that I use for my solutions, MVC Application 1. And as soon as that's done, you'll notice a bunch of things happening. First of all, it's also adding a lot of JavaScript libraries automatically into this project. That's something you'll see new in Visual Studio. And we actually have a package manager that will update that for you. Now, out of the box, this is a really basic web application. But I'm going to show you a couple characteristics of it that are new. The first characteristic is that it looks and feels like a regular ASP.NET MVC web application. But it's got a few little bells and whistles for it. You'll notice the template's updated, and it's kind of more modern looking. And it's got all the stuff built in. But as I resize the window, you'll notice that the layout automatically changed based on the kind of dimensions. And that CSS and HTML going nuts there. You'll also notice that if I go to my views and go to a page, I'm using HTML5 and schema validation for that. So that's built in, and we have great support for statement completion and all that kind of wonderful stuff. But if I go to that application again and run it in Internet Explorer and take a look at, maybe simulate what this would look like on another device, and we do have tools in Internet Explorer to help you with that. If I bring up the developer tools, I can actually go to the tools menu, change my user agent string, and say, what is this going to look like on the Windows Phone device, and refresh the page. It's not going to look much different, unfortunately. So how did we handle that? Well, let's actually go look at a solution that was built to handle that with HTML5. One of the things that the Model View Controller architecture now supports is the concept of having not just a regular layout, which controls how it's going to format the page on your screen, but it also supports a mobile layout that is automatically selected based on the browser that the client's consuming. So if I go and look at this particular application, another kind of ASP.NET web app, in Internet Explorer, and wait for it to come up. It's a wonderful little app, but again, it doesn't automatically resize. However, if I go and look at that same application and perhaps use the iPhone simulator and run that using the iPhone simulator, and it should pop up in a second, we should see what that same application will render like on a Safari phone or a Safari browser on the iPhone. And the same sort of content or experience is there, but now it's optimized for that particular form factor. And how did it do that magic? Well, it's not really magic. It knows that I'm coming in from a particular device, can automatically route so that I have the best experience on that connected device, no matter what the platform. So that's pretty cool stuff. Isn't that cool? Yeah? Now, some will ask, does Visual Studio ship with an iPhone and an iPad simulator? And the answer is no, it doesn't. However, if you install the wonderful Web Matrix 2 tool on your PC, one of the Electric Plum's iPhone and iPad simulators are available as free plugins for that. You can hook that up to run inside of Visual Studio. So one other tool that that I really like to use that you probably won't see again today, if I stop this experience, I'll also pick this thing called the Page Inspector. And if I run this same app now with the Page Inspector, we're going to get a slightly different experience. The Page Inspector actually will host it inside of IE. And this allows me to, it's sort of a combination of a whole series of developer tools brought together. So if I go and look at this experience, for example, I can actually go and inspect particular elements. For example, I can go and highlight this H2 element, and I can actually see the HTML that's rendering that, the style sheets that have been used to render that particular component. Heck, it even shows me the CSHTML, the ASP.NET code that's running to render that on the server, which is really kind of neat. If I click on that now and go over, for example, I can go ahead and see, oh, wow, somebody hard-coded the username in there. That's probably not what I wanted to do, so I could actually say at user.identity.name instead of the hard-coded value. Make that change, rerun, and it'll recompile and show me that change in real time. So the idea is, as you bring together, you'll notice that I'm not logged in and I'd have to sign in it doesn't know who I am right now. But the idea is we're bringing together tools that help you build applications much faster as well. As you start to go down the road of HTML5, cascading style sheets 3, client-side JavaScript, ASP.NET code on the server, there's a lot of moving pieces that are connecting together to form an experience out to the client. The Page Inspector is a great way for us to manage that. So with that, I'm going to stop debugging. I'm going to actually hand this back to Claude. And we will continue on with the slideshow. Thanks.
Thanks, Adam. So we talked a little bit about the app and the requirement from the app and the underlying technology shifts happening that brought this idea. And now what we'll talk a little bit about is the life cycle itself. So as we said earlier, things are happening, but as we said earlier, with those modern apps, we need to have that velocity, that tight cycle to deliver value more often. The way Microsoft sees it now, which is kind of interesting over the last few years, is actually we spend a lot of our career on the left side in this actual development loop. And now we're looking at it more as an overall loop. We're looking at it, instead of being developer-centric, now it's application-centric. So when we look at the modern life cycle, it's really looking at the app. So it usually starts with a user somewhere saying, I have this business need that I want to have. And then there's a lot of things that happens to transform that business need into a working app. And I'd say up to a couple of years ago, that was ALM. So we started with, from the request to the functioning app that delivered the business value that the person funding the project what was hoping to receive at the end. Actually, now it doesn't stop there, and it actually never stopped there, but the scope was more limited in terms of the tooling, the process we had. So that's where this idea of DevOps and this idea of a complete lifecycle comes in. It comes in, it gets into production. Now that it's in production, we need to monitor our apps. We need to get insight on them. We need to get user reactions to the app. And again, if we deliver very quickly, we'll get that reaction much more often, much quicker, and then we can feed that back into our learning cycle with actionable information and get the next version. So the key is no longer we build the app, we deliver them, we're done. Now it's basically the app continues living and we'll manage the whole cycle continuously. So one of our goal there is to actually get into that, get that continuous feedback, bring in quality a lot earlier on. That's often where the delays came. We were in dev, and then we had all these gates to make sure we had quality before we put it out. And now that we say, well, we want to go earlier, and we want to go more often to get more business value right away, but also get comments, get learning from the usage of the system, it means quality needs to be in on the pieces we do as we go. So bringing quality much earlier is another one of the big aspects. And one of the key there, so when we look at it as a whole cycle, now we look at it as a whole system. So we look at it from how do I eliminate my waste that I have between all the ends of, right? A good concept we see more in release management is this idea of a null release. You basically go in and you change one line of code, one remark. That doesn't change anything. How long does it take for one line of code to be changed from check-in to be actually in the end of the user? And so what it means is that there's no feature-specific work to be done. It's just all your taxes. So it's where you can measure, actually, the time it takes from one department to get to the other, from one group to the other group, the emailing, the times to react. So the idea with the modern app lifecycle, that learning, that continuous delivery, we need to look at all those delays and streamline them as much as we can. That's kind of the underpinning from a process perspective to get to our continuous delivery of value to the customer. So there are impediments to that. Often, and again, there's a lot of there, but Agile's been very good at helping with the left side in terms of managing priorities, making sure we work on the right things, the thing that brings value. But in many cases, we kind of actually start getting and blocking when it's time to get it operational or in production. That's where, actually, my experience is in many cases, people will go and use the cloud because you kind of can get faster, get a new machine up on the cloud, and get it done internally. So operation side now are getting a lot faster. The other thing also is often, you know, developer comes with their app and it's not production ready. It's missing all these other characteristics for to be in production. Is it, you know, can we do a rollback? Can we do an upgrade properly and so on and so forth? So the key is the improvement comes from looking at the old system and basically making sure those transitions kind of work. And it's the same thing coming back. Mark was giving an example of how do the bug come back in? Right, and are they actionable? Can I read them, reproduce them? And again, tooling helps a lot with that. Process helps a lot, and the people and the structure in the organization help a lot. So that's really the thinking behind the tooling or the approach when we're looking at ALM. Our goal should no longer be we need to deliver more often in terms of defining delivery as this spot there out of dev, you know, ready for prod, but it should be delivered to the end user actually using the app in production. And then from there, restarting our cycle. I'll just go over what I call the ugly slide. It's probably the ugliest slide you'll see today. So I'll just quickly go over what are all these tools at a 1,000-feet level. So not very detailed, but what we see people putting in place, and everything I'll show is actually part in the box in Visual Studio. So today, modern life cycle, what it looks like from a tooling perspective is you start with some requirements, and now today you can break your requirements, you break the task you need for them, you'll write the tests you'll need to test them. By the way, if you write your test as you do your tasks, that's how you'll be able to test faster, automate some of them, and basically get your cycle a bit faster. And now you can actually do storyboards. doesn't completely fit. So left side is requirements and tasks. And you can actually do storyboards. There's a new storyboard tool where you can actually go in, into PowerPoint. It's an add-on, drag your thing, animate it, and look at different paths and whatnot, and get a, an interaction with potential users on seeing how the system could be. Very easy to do. And again, it's linked, not we'll do the whole thing ahead of time, but it picks one requirement, one small level requirement, and we just go, here's what the implementation would be as we go and develop it. So as we start coding, writing tests, we have a nice tool to develop our interface. Then the developer does a check-in. So obviously he has all the tools Adam was talking about, and you'll see a lot of them in the development environment. But at some point he does a check-in and gets into source control. That you have on TFS, so it comes in the box where you can do branching, merging, labeling, and actually it's a first level source control system. We can now interact with GitHub. There's also a TFS service on the cloud, so we can pop up a TFS on the cloud to manage your code and your builds. And after you've done your check-in, normally for on a team, you build your app right away because you want to know the code I just check-in, did I break anything? So team build will start, and we'll run your unit test. So normally, again, test early, test often. You have your unit test. You see if you broke anything on your base functionality of the level at the code smallest unit level. You run your code coverage. So it's nice to say 99% of my tests pass. Yes, and it costs four, and it tests 4% of my app. Not so great. So the key here is we get our coverage with our unit test, and we look at, you know, the system will do code analysis. Look, if your bits are too big, if you have too much, you know, level of inheritance in your code and things of that nature. That works fairly nice with some of your metrics. So if that passes, then you get your bit. So that's great. So I have my executable. And again, with team build now, what we can also do before we get there, we can actually use with the architecture feature, we can do a lot of things like do UML models and whatnot for more complex parts. We can also go look at code and see the structure in the code to help us when we have to go do maintenance on code written by other people. And one other thing you can do is you can actually define your model of your app, all your layering, and at check-in, the system will say, hey, you just basically, you're doing a call from there to there. It's not on the model. You're not respecting architecture. So again, that should happen every time a developer does a check-in, once or twice a day, depending on the size of the task they've defined. So if that passes, now I know my first drop has at least a minimum level of quality. And again, all that stuff you set up, you put the rules to use it internally, you train the people, and it just runs every time. It's completely automated. From them, then you want to be able to deploy it into a test environment. That's where also you can start and do your automated testing. All comes in the box, so you can run your automated UI tests, you can run some web tests. It's shared between developer and tester. If your test runs work, then that's where you'll go and move it over into a next environment. I need to be closer. Where basically now you're getting, and you might have others, but you're getting the point where now you want users to look at it. And that's where, if everything automated works, then I'll invest the very heavy cost of having somebody manually run tests, because that's a lot more expensive to run a manual test than run an automated test. Again, we have Test Manager, which is a great tool in Microsoft to structure your test run. You can actually, I didn't put the line there, but you take your requirements, and your requirements are linked to your test suites. You can do your test runs, see how you're doing, and so on and so forth. These can actually also use to run your automated test. So you run those. One of the features you have also is that you can do a manual test and record the manual test to replay it manually. So it's a replay, not an automated test. The difference is automated runs on the server, nobody involved. The automated, it's kind of, it will click for you, it will type in data, but then it will stop and say, does it work? So you'll have to be in front of a screen, look at it, and kind of run through the test. But again, for manual tests, that user acceptance testers, you know, Betty in accounting, your super user testing it, that works very nice. So you're going through that. By the way, here I've put automated deployment. You can deploy out of team build into an environment. Often in more structured environment, you actually need a way to deploy to production. So InReleased is a tool. It's an add-on to TFS that actually uses the production deployment right away in dev. And then basically you just run your deployment script. It changes variables as you go for all the servers you go through. From that there, you have, again, all the performance testing tools that you can use. You can use all your other tests to run that. So you run your performance. You can provision environment with Lab Manager, which is another tool, which will take templates of VMs and create them to run your test runs. Once you're done, it will destroy the specific instance of your VMs, and then next time you need them, it will recreate them. We can now do that on the cloud. We can use Azure as my hosting for those VMs. Again, so that simplifies a lot the involvement that you have as you go forward into your development cycle. And then you get to the IP customer, right? I drew it, so... And that's where we used to stop. But now what we know is that, yes, so from that customer now, actually what I can do is if production have issues with my app, they can actually create bugs in System Center that will feed back into TFS. We can also in production get a lot of information with IntelliTrace in production, which basically allows us to replay what happened on the production server so to help us with the debugging experience. So the key there is to remove the no repro bugs that comes from production. So you have all that information, you can take snapshots, and then the developers can rerun their code on the snapshot of what production was so that you're able to diagnose this better. You also have a new tool in 2012, which is called Preemptive Analytics for TFS, where you can set rules to catch unhandled exceptions and handle exception and actually get metrics on that. And you can say, well, if more than 50 per day happen of that exception, something's wrong with the system, right? Or if that path of the code is happening more than that many times, then I want to know, and actually goes back into FS, creates a work item to go back and say, hey, a lot of people get rejected from a security perspective, or the system is not able to do this, and here's all the exceptions we get in the back, whether the user sees it or not. So again, that's another way to bring it all the way back into your requirement. And the last thing, I told you it was a really ugly slide at the end of the day. We have a lot of dashboards through web access, so with the web where we can actually access pretty much everything that's happening there. So a big point in the overall circle is we need to be able to measure so that we can adapt. We have all that information, and throughout the rest of the day we'll see that. But that's kind of that circle tool-wise, like at the, you know, on the ground, this is kind of what we're putting in place. This is what you should look at, see if your modern app lifecycle in place, you do all these things. And pretty much nobody does, right? So that's more a goal at this point. The reality is what you can do, though, is to figure out in each of these practices, because there's a lot of them, it's actually look at all these practices and say, well, first, you should prioritize which one you're looking at doing and improving. Not every team has the same problem, has the same issues from the life cycles. So you need, basically, as they're saying, like every dysfunctionality is unique. So you need to figure out where in your cycle, where are your bottlenecks, and go pick the right practice, attack them, put them in place, use them, and then go to the next one. And then look at your practice. And if you look at this idea, you kind of end up with a backlog of improvements, and you pick, cycles of improvements. So it really becomes the agile thinking works very, very well in putting in place all these tools to your development team. So there's a couple of tools. If you go on the ALM Catalyst site or on our site at InCycle, there's a tool there to do a self-assessment to help you with these different things. We also have a what we call a blueprint. It's a TFS template to help put in place the practices where basically creates a Scrum project out of these different practices. There's a few of them pre-written on, kind of what standard way to go at implementing it, which type of training. And actually, then you can use blueprint. There's some reports on seeing how you're advancing your own dashboard of improvement for your team. That's all free, so it's out there. But the main concept there is that there's a lot of things. It's all there. We can use it, go in small pieces, put it in place, learn from it, and basically attack it in a way of looking at your overall cycle and making your cycle remove waste and making them the most efficient possible. So when we look at it, and what we just looked at is kind of this line there in the middle. And more actually, when we look at the development approach, we're no longer only just developing for .NET apps. We're developing for all kinds of apps. And that's kind of the good news. Now, if you're doing .NET, Visual Studio will work with it. Then you can, if you're working in Eclipse, you can use a T, not to play golf, but it's Team Explorer everywhere. So basically, it brings you that connectivity to TFS from those clients. So even if you have .NET themes mixing with other types of technologies, you can actually have that whole cycle running with the same set of tools. And then you have the TSC cross-platform for these others. And then there's a lot of integration APIs that you can use for all the different tools, System Center and whatnot. So there's a nice integration layer that comes with the overall TFS Visual Studio platform. And there's a bunch of partner solutions that extends TFS. In Cycle, we're one of those. We have a release management extension in release that I mentioned ago, which I'll just spend a minute describing what it does, because you're an audience, you're captive, so I'm taking advantage of that. But it's really that. It's, we're working with the API to just complement the gap we have. And what we did actually is something we used to do at every customer. And then at some point, we just packaged it. But in your case, the tools are more and more extendable. And there's a lot of effort in up to 2012. But in 2012, it's getting a lot easier to extend the platform. So it's the same thing when we look at the cycle. Actually, the part we're dealing with is going from dev to prod, like doing that deployment. So our product, basically, we're handling the very complex error from a chaotic. So the product is just to automate that transition. The way we do it is very smart, and if I say so myself, is really the way we go to prod, we try to bring it earlier in the dev cycle. So that by the time you get to prod, you've run it hundreds of times. So we integrate very closely with Team Build to do that. And then we automate the deployment in every environment, including production. So the key is not make prod like dev, it's more make dev like prod. And that solves a lot of your issues. The other thing is, again, in our cycle, it's the handoff. So we automate that workflow. And by deploying the same way every time, we solve a bit the production-ready code that we need. As I said, we manage the workflow. And we give full traceability. So we're able to go from a check-in. That old cycle that Microsoft has built over the years is great. So we can actually link a check-in to the code in production and be able to do the whole traceability, including all the tests and so on and so forth. Again, that's all in TFS. All right. So the key points that we have there is that for this session, and I hope you got this, if we did not so bad. So modernization is happening, whether we like it or not. That's coming from the users, that's coming from the technology, the convergence of all those technologies. We have the tools and practice to do that. That's a good news. Everything's there. Like in that sense, we find that Microsoft and the tool providers are really ahead of the curve on that. And the challenge for us is to pick the right pieces, put them in place, and get your own improvement cycle going so that you're able to deliver the first point, those modern app. And basically, that's kind of the third point at the same time. And now, the best slide. So we'll go, I'll turn it over to Sean. Thank you, everyone.